This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously,
especially when they give advice.
Do not take Marshall's analogies literally,
especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey.
The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks, bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670.
Sarah Spain on the score. What a time to be alive.
Hell yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Can I tell you, I never thought that there were like real rivalries.
I know what you think about really what's happened just the last few days, obviously with the Caleb Williams dropping.
We're being honest, can't blame anyone for being worried about coming here. How many times do we see the same story play out? I'm optimistic, but they have beaten me down a little, guys. You know what? I want to tell you this. Every single year, I'm like, I'm optimistic. I'm going to say like 10 wins. Like every year, I'd be like 10 wins.
I did.
Diamond. A flat circle.
Can we just be above 500?
No.
We in this space always like it when people hang out.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like we've become the hangout show.
That's awesome. That's a good reputation to have.
We're very approachable people. That's what
come
we
chill
are.
In studio.
Like a late night diner, but in the middle of the daytime.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Cool. Like all day menu. Yeah.
Perfect.
After the club, but really before the club.
Or yes, we are both.
Or perhaps you are the club.
Post-game show.
But in Declare, we all fam. What?
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, I had time to think about this, Layla. We can be the club. I forgot day clubs exist. We can act like we're in Vegas and it's sunny outside and it's 80 degrees right now. We in the club. Day drinking greater.
You're right about that. In the summer, all bets are off. There's definitely daytime drinking that goes on. Here's my laugh, though, is that as I was hearing that again, I'm like, oh, and the boomers and the Gen Zers who overlap way too much on a lot of things are probably like, oh, that's so cringe. And then I'm like, oh, well, then just don't listen.
I wasn't thinking that at all. I was like, if you with us, you with us. If you against us, well, to keep
you're
listening,
apparently
but be against
us anyway.
Yeah, that's
points
good.
To scoreboard. Let's go. We broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. On the ones and twos, it is Robbie Triano, Ray Diaz, also producing. Who's in the back? Is Brandon back?
That's right, Brandon.
Brandon is back. Nice to see Brandon Fryer. Baby T did a nice job in your absence. Still not okay with calling him that.
I also saw Cody Westerlund down the hallway before I even got here. I was like, whoa.
Cody Westerlund in the house. Also, so is Connor O'Donnell. Nice to see him as well. Jenna O'Donnell is also manning. Jenna O'Donnell. Jenna Duddleston is also manning Twitch. And so is Matt Anias. You can see us on Twitch at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. And you can text us as well. For example, 574. PCA is Jeter-esque is leadoff. Why did I think you said Jester-esque? He absolutely should lead off and Hap should understand why. PCA what? Drawing the Jeter comp to start our day. That's where we're at with this thing.
No, you should not lead. Stop. Stop. We'll talk about it.
I mean, we also are here for the hot takes, but that is how you start a show. We actually want to start, though, with the Bears because this was something we were anticipating. And it was also something that Ryan Poles alluded to in a pre-draft availability. He said that extending Joe Tooney was a priority. Well, guess what? They did just that. We get the news this morning that the Bears have extended Joe Tooney. We understand that it is through his age 35 season. He's 32 right now. Reportedly, $51 million over 3 years per a league source. That binds him to the Bears through the 2027 season. $33.5 million in fully guaranteed money. My immediate questions are, how does this look to your salary cap? At last check, the Bears had $10.5 million that they had free to work with. Does that open up more money for them to work with, say, this year? Does that open up more money to, say, fix your running back problem? How does this also help your team, not just from a standpoint of you getting this done, but also does it give you more flexibility to get what you want?
My initial thought when I saw the news was, okay, about time. This sounds about the time that this would get done. But also, now you look at the interior offensive line and you realize they have them all under contract through that 2027 season. So that should not be a problem, injuries notwithstanding, which of course there will be injuries. But injuries notwithstanding, they have a plan. And it looks like a very, very good plan on paper. Now we'll see what it looks like 3 years down the road. But as of right now, you have to be happy with what they have set up for the 25, 26, and 27 season on the interior with Drew Dahlman, also with Jonah Jackson, and of course, the now re-signed, extended Joe Tooney, who, again, two-time All-Pro. He was the MVP of a Chiefs team that won a Super Bowl and one of the adults in the room now on this Bears team.
Yeah, and that, I think, is a really valid point when it comes to helping culture. You know, I feel like Joe Tooney was one of those signings, or in this case, trades, where when the Bears acquired him, I thought, not just from a football standpoint, this was a sound idea, but also given all the quotes that we heard last season about players just feeling lost or like the slumps lengthening, you know, like when you heard guys like Kyler Gordon talk about how they've never been a part of a winning team in the NFL and they're in their prime, you know, you hate to hear that. And you wonder how you can help mitigate that. You know, what does the locker room sound like in those moments? So I think having somebody like Joe Tooney, who's an offensive leader, who is somebody people lean on, a veteran who is a trusted and established voice to say, hey, this isn't that bad, but this is, you know, kind of give some perspective there. That is a big part of this to me as to why it's such a big help in the room. I'm not normally the emotion person when it comes to these kind of acquisitions, but I feel like in this case, having that leadership is a really good thing in addition to what he brings to the field.
Yeah, with Ben Johnson at the helm, you get the sense that the offense has not just direction, but has parts that can live up to whatever that direction is from the head coach in his first year doing those specific duties. Obviously, he's a play caller. That's been his first and foremost duty until now. Now he's got to be able to balance the stuff. We'll see what kind of role Declan Doyle has in that as the technical offensive coordinator for this team. The other thing that you brought up is how are we stretching this out? How does this extension make the monies work to maybe get a little more cap space in this first season in 2025 and address running back, which I guess ironically has to be addressed because you didn't address it in the running back rich NFL draft. And now we know that you had a chance to possibly address it earlier than you did. Well, we do know that you had several chances to address it before the seventh round pick of Kyle Manungai. But now we have some specific details on what kind of conversation was had about moving up in the draft.
Yeah, that's it. You addressed your priority. You extended the guy you wanted to extend. So now that that's said, how much wiggle room do you have? Because Sports Illustrated has this story. Details of Chicago Bears 2025 NFL draft trade offer to the New England Patriots revealed. What does it summarize? The thing we've all been suspecting, which was, if you run at a running back that badly to where you're talking about Ashton Jeanty, who was picked sixth overall, why didn't you get one until the seventh round in Kyle Manungai in the NFL draft? That is not shade to Kyle Manungai. It is simply pointing out that that's a lot of rounds in between point A and B. And we get this report. Now we know exactly what GM Ryan Poles offered the Patriots in his effort to land the running back, who is often compared to Detroit Lions star Jahmyr Gibbs. Keep that in mind when Neil Colston Loveland drew the Sam LaPorta comp during the run-up to the draft. The Patriots opted to keep their pick, number 38 overall, and they used it to get former Ohio State running back Travion Henderson. The Sports Illustrated report says the Poles offered the number 39 and a seventh-round pick to New England for number 38.
I have a question, Layla. Who did the Bears end up taking in the seventh round?
Kyle Manungai, a running back.
Hmm.
But my point is, that's all you offered was a seventh round pick to move up one spot when everybody and their dog knew that you wanted a running back?
It's interesting because that was only one of two trade offers offered to New England. The Texans also tried to get the 38th pick. They offered the Patriots a package of three picks in a swap. So it was going to be the number 58 and number 79 picks in the 2025 draft, as well as a third round pick in 2026. Again, the Patriots declined. That makes me think that even if you offered a sixth rounder, a fifth rounder, the Patriots might have been like, look, we know you want Travion Henderson, but we want him too. Why would we trade out and give you up the running back? So they may have been in a situation where they were never going to give up that pick to the Bears specifically because they could see what they needed on their running back board. But at the same time, they probably should have offered something a little stronger.
I mean, I'm happy to know that there was some sort of counter counter, I guess, action to be taken when it came to once your guy was off the board, what were you going to do when there were so many other options? Ryan Poles talked about staying disciplined to your board, but sometimes it can be to a fault if you need to maneuver to get somebody who's at a higher level than what the board dictates. And that's why I bring this up. We all knew the Bears needed a running back. We all knew that the Bears needed somebody who complemented DeAndre Swift. There were multiple options for them to do so. But if I'm the Patriots, I'm doing the same thing because you're going to have to come up in your price. Yesterday's price is not today's price when it comes to where this draft board landed and to whom. So I don't see what was wrong with say, offering a higher round pick like a sixth or a fifth to get it done. I know fifth is a little expensive, but when you consider the dependence on the run game that Ben Johnson's offense has, and he's told you about it himself, I don't think that would have been outlandish.
I mean, they come up with Zoff Frazier, right, with that fifth round pick. And you have to ask yourself, are you okay with Zoff Frazier not being on the roster to have Travion Henderson in your backfield? For me, the answer is easy because I've never seen Zoff Frazier line up as a Bears cornerback in a game.
I know they love his speed. I know that Dennis Allen vehemently said he can run, and I appreciate them appreciating traits, so to speak. But man, like that is I guess either you're telling us that running back wasn't as much a priority as you want, or that your draft board was that much dictating what you were doing to the point where we know they end up with Luther Burden.
I wonder what that conversation was like in the room with Ryan Poles and then Ian Cunningham, and you assume Ben Johnson, even Dennis Allen, when that pick comes up and they're trying to trade up. And, you know, Ryan Poles ultimately is responsible for what the capital is going to be in a trade offer. And I wonder if Ben Johnson was on the same page with him in that moment about not trying to do something more to get Travion Henderson. And if the answer is he was on board with it, because we know they're not going to agree on everything, then now it is really up to Ben Johnson, and it always was going to be up to Ben Johnson, no matter who they drafted, in what order, whether it was a defensive player taken in the first and second rounds, or whether it was an offensive player, which it ended up being taken in the first and second rounds. It's incumbent now on Ben Johnson to make this thing hum. With whatever parts they end up with, make this thing hum. With the Tooney news, though, you're thinking the likelihood of them adding another veteran running back is a strong possibility. Although I will remind people, still don't know what this regime thinks about Roschon Johnson, and also about DeAndre Swift in terms of what roles they could play in this offense next year.
I mean, we heard Eric Bieniemy talk a little bit about what he thinks DeAndre Swift should do and implied that he needs to be more downhill in his running style. I don't think that that's out of the scope of his resume. Brad Biggs reporting that the Tooney cap number for 2025 is $8 million. Well, why is that important? Because if you look at SpotRack right now, the Tooney cap hit is 16. So that would indicate if these two numbers are correct, and sometimes the details aren't always evident on the first day of information, that there would be a lot of money that gets freed up because of this. Tooney, according to SpotRac, was taking up 5.73% of the Bears' cap space. So that's significant when you consider that might free up some more money for somebody else. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. We get to talk a little NFL news. And this segment is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. So based on that information, that gives you some encouragement. Here's an interesting piece of this, too, as I'm looking at it right now. This is the active roster cap from SpotRac. So we mentioned Tooney's at 16. Tremaine Edmonds is at 17.4. Drew Dahlman is next behind Joe Tooney, along with Jonah Jackson. So Jackson's number is 14.7, and Dahlman's is 13.6.
Don't forget about Jalen Johnson at 21, straight
up. Right, but when you consider those people next to each other, like you knew Montez Sweat's taking up most of your money. You know next is DJ Moore. You know next is Jalen Johnson. But in that neighborhood, it's Edmonds, Tooney, Jackson, Dahlman. So that changes now because of the restructuring to this deal. And that's why I think it's important. It's not necessarily about the age 35 season. It's about what's happening to free you up more money right now.
$8 million. So if it was 5.7, my quick math on me here tells me that was, 2.85% of the cap is what he'll now represent with the $8 million hit. That frees up about $8 million, if not exactly $8 million, about $8 million in cap space. That's a big number and a lot of room to add. We can get creative here. There's other things you can add if you make another extension like this. You know, I'm not out on, you know, trades with teams that play in the state of Ohio on the border of Kentucky. I'm not out on that. But I think overall, this was a necessary move. This was an anticipated move. And now you got to go fix the problem that you didn't address, unless you don't think it's a problem. And there is a chance they don't think they have a problem in the running back room.
After what happened in the Cubs game today or yesterday with closer by committee, I don't know how I feel about running back by committee today.
Don't let that affect.
In the year of our Lord 2025. Like, I just don't know how I feel about undefined roles right now and where I sit with it. So
the fair thing about the Cubs thing is that's an injury created problem. And we may end up in that running back by
closer
committee.
Closer by committee is, well, maybe so because of Porter Hodge.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think everybody
originally it was not.
Everybody had Porter Hodge and Ryan Pressly at the back end of that bullpen, 8-9 in that order, relatively speaking. But with this offensive line, you know people are going to get hurt. You know it's not just going to be Tooney, Jackson, Dahlman, Wright, and who am I missing? Oh, Trapillo. It could be...
All right, Trapillo to start. I mean, it's Braxton Jones per usual.
Yeah, it could be Braxton
but
Jones.
He's got
it could
the
be,
broken ankle.
Kieran Amagaji. It could be other guys.
Hopefully it's less than 27 combinations. That's the hope.
That's a good starting point, Layla. I want to get it. I
want to
whittle it down
25.
Beyond 27. But
let's go for 25 this year.
Nah, I'd say 20 combinations is too many. 15 is too many. If I told you right now, the Bears at the end of next season will have used 10 different combinations on offensive line, your reaction would be what?
Outstanding compared to the year before. I would also bet you a dollar that doesn't happen. You want your dollar back that I took from you after the Cubs series?
Yo, talk that smack. Listen. White Sox out here losing games. They're saying we can get back under that 46.5 over under. That's what they're telling me anyway, with the way they're playing of late. The last
I won
four
a
games.
Dollar because of Crosstown.
Yes. Good job. I said they'd win the series. They did not win a game.
And I'm trying to give Marshall the dollar back, but he just doesn't want to take it.
No, I want to earn it back. I want to earn it on merit. Okay? That's what I would like to do. I would also like to see the Bears earn more than the 7 wins I predicted, but hey, here
Why
we
Why did
are.
I just come across some hot gossip right now?
What you got?
Do we want to do this?
Well, just say it, and then we can come back
What's
and talk more
goss?
About it.
It's hot goss. I wouldn't call it breaking news.
Okay, what is it?
Hot goss on the score is brought to you by Wildfire.
I don't know that that's
Join
how that
Wildfire
works.
Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories.
What is the hot goss?
According to Chad Graff, who is the Patriots writer for The Athletic, Jordan Hudson has told at least one person that she and Bill Belichick are engaged.
Oh, that what? Is hot goss.
That's the hottest of
gossip. That's the gossip. That's the sweet tea. Okay, that's
what I told you.
We call that crunchy sweet tea. You know, where there's so much sugar in it, you could still taste the granulated sugar.
Yeah, it didn't dissolve enough.
Yeah, it didn't dissolve enough. Crunchy. We call that country crunchy sweet tea.
Country.
I can tell you, I watched an interview with Bill Belichick over the weekend. And I totally saw this coming. Maybe that's something we could get into later.
You have been the beat reporter for our show on this.
This is the hottest topic outside of Chicago sports for myself. For whatever reason, I'm so into this story.
Well, because it's strange.
I don't think it's strange. Man fell in love. He proposed.
There are strains. Yeah, you can fall in love, and that doesn't mean you give up your entire football program.
There are strange aspects to this typical story.
He didn't
Especially when other people are in charge. It's not like this is a TV show where like one person is in charge of a football program. There's many people.
I don't think it's that strange. I mean, I see what happened. Everything is explainable, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Text,
it's not inexplicable.
The text coming in. No, Bill, run!
Down on Jordan.
I also like that everybody on the Twitch mob is on board with the phrase hot goss. Hot gossip, if you will. So let's continue with some Bears talk. It's not the hot gossip. It is some actual expertise, if you will. It's in the department of the redundancy department.
It's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, when Kurt Warner talks about who should be watching film and how, we listen. So we'll do that next on The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Article suggests that Caleb told his dad Bears coaches weren't teaching him what to watch on film. Y'all, it's the league, bruh. Coaches don't tuck you in bed at night and say, all right, little Timmy, you need to watch the Lions play. All right, little Timmy, you got to watch the Vikings. It's the league, bro.
That was Emmanuel Acho reacting to the story last week from Seth Wickersham about Carl Williams and Caleb Williams. Carl talking about the struggles that his son Caleb had gone through. The Bears, by the way, have an OTA this week, so we are watching to see if they make Caleb Williams available when the team has a media session. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. We are joining you not just talking about football, but also talking about that story in particular. Kurt Warner, who's normally on during the football season with the afternoon show, Spiegel and Holmes, was on with him again yesterday to talk about that very thing. How much of it was Caleb Williams in that story on his own because of a lack of coaching watching film, or was he watching film on his own because he needed to show more incentive? And that's an aspect of this. It's still being discussed.
I think he definitely needed to do more. And I don't know if he felt mentally beaten down working with the likes of Shane Waldron and Matt Eberflus to where he felt like he couldn't get help. And it was all on him because, number one, and Lawrence Holmes brought this up yesterday, asking for help can be a hard thing to do.
Absolutely.
Especially for men. And especially for men of a certain age who just have not had to ask for as much help as some other people have. This guy's been a star athlete his entire life. Everything's been catered to him. And I think when you talk about Kurt Warner and the way he sees things, let's remember Kurt Warner's background before we hear what he has to say and understand this is a guy who made his way up through the Arena League. He was stocking groceries at one point before becoming a Hall of Famer, an MVP, a Super Bowl champion.
I think the question that Emmanuel asks somewhat stylistically and that Kurt Warner ended up asking or talking about yesterday to the afternoon show and that we have asked is, if you need help like that, who's your guy? Who's your next person that you can talk to if it's not your OC? How much can you succeed in spite of that person? If you're watching film and you don't know what to watch, I'm also asking the question, what happened at USC? Because Lincoln Riley, especially if you're going to follow him from Oklahoma to USC, how much of that is on him to also help you understand the concept of going over film? Because when I covered OU and Bob Stoops was the head coach there, that was something that was discussed. Like, you knew that they watched film, but I know a lot of it was perhaps in retrospect to go over the previous game. I don't know how much of it was in preview to go over their game plan other than just running plays that they knew they needed to run. That was something you do in practice. But either way, process and procedure was discussed. At USC, you would think it would have been as well. So how much of it is on QB1? How much of it was on Bears coaching? Kurt Warner offered this thought yesterday.
I would like to think that, you know, if you're 21, 22, 23, and you're stepping into the NFL, that you're an adult too. And, you know, you're willing to say, you know, and ask for help in areas that you're not getting help. Like, I can't believe, you know, if Caleb were to go into a coach and say, hey, coach, I need help watching film. Kind of take me through a process. Like, this is what I'm watching. I'm not sure if it's the right thing. Take me through that. I can't believe the coach would say, yeah, I don't have time for that. And then just go, you're going to have to do it on your own. Like, that just seems really odd. Now, if that happens, that is, you know, I mean, that's terrible for a coaching staff if you're going to do something like that. So I don't know the answer to that question. I just have to believe that they assumed he was good. And so they went and did the normal stuff that they do. And then that never got figured out. But I mean, it makes sense, of course. Like, it makes sense to check every box and have everything laid out and, you know, go through every question you may have. But a lot of it, I kind of assume you already figured out during the process. Like, if, you know, if I was, you know, going to draft somebody number one overall, I'm putting them up on a board. I'm talking to them. I'm getting a sense that they understand the game of football and they understand what they're looking at. And so I think part of that, when you decide to draft somebody number one overall, is you've probably seen enough to say, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like, this guy knows football. And so you kind of assume, because he knows all this and he had great success in college, well, he must know how to watch film. Like, he must be doing it and it's working for him and he's really smart. So why do we think that we have to take him through that? Because we're kind of just assuming that's the case. And so that makes 100% sense to me as well. And I think that's what a lot of coaches do, is they feel so comfortable with a guy that they're like, oh gosh, this guy knows, this guy's good, you know, and if he needs something, he'll ask us, but we're comfortable with where he's at.
Kurt Warner on the process of a quarterback and a head coach getting assimilated really to each other. And it was striking what he said. And I agree with him by and large. I just think the organizational dysfunction, specifically with the coaching staff, was at a level where I can completely understand why Caleb Williams felt the way he felt.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that completely. But I also know that some of that is on you.
Yeah.
And when you see things that aren't working, and the Bears have all told us separately in so many words that there were warning signs. We had red flags. And the scarier part was that very little was done until the firing of Shane Waldron to address them. You don't have to fire somebody in order to make change. In this case, it was warranted. But one of the first things that I noticed that Ben Johnson always says was talking about how I want you to see the game the way I do. Now, that's a directive and an understanding that already lays out a mission statement and some sort of pathway to action. That's not something that was done previously. I had often said on the record that I wanted the head football coach of the team to talk about the offense as much as he talks about the defense, and that just didn't happen. So then, therefore, that goes to your OC. Well, if your OC doesn't even have a first 15 scripted plays, what are you guys doing there? Just rolling your helmet out for the first three plays? Like, what's going on?
Further to your point, Layla, that's why I wanted the head coach of the Chicago Bears. This goes back, predates Caleb Williams. This goes back to when they made a decision that Matt Nagy was no longer going to be the head coach. I was like, better be an offensive-minded head coach. He better be an offensive-minded head coach. Because one way you guarantee that the head coach talks about offense just as much as the defense, if not more, is by hiring an offensive head coach.
It's not a guarantee. Like, there are other defensive head coaches who center their whole ethos around the offense, and then they try to mess it up. Like, that is a way you can look at this. I always say to you know, the art of war, you better know what your opponent is doing. You better know how to speak the language of your opponent. So,
yes,
I get that side of it.
No, I understand that part. I think
like, you just didn't have a direction when it came to offense. I don't know if there was a standard operating procedure there. And if there is one, I would love for somebody to tell us.
I think the hiring process of the offensive coordinator under Matt Eberflus tells us everything. It told us in the moment, and then it told us once we got Shane Waldron out here play calling what it was going to be. And quite frankly, more importantly, what it was not going to be.
And I do think that there's pressure on the quarterback, and in this case, on Caleb Williams, to be the calm one, to be what is perceived as a leader, and say, I got this. If you don't got it, which unfortunately the tape showed at times, especially during the latter part of the season, then whose responsibility was it to help you get it?
Here's my overarching point on this whole matter going forward, and really going back to the past, is mentorship is a thing. And everybody I know that's been successful in whatever field they're in, and specifically in sports as well, has mentors outside of the people they work with every day. They have people, coaches, older players, however you want to call it, who before they got to the college level in high school, they had guys. They went to camps. They met people who helped them with their game. Before they got to the pros, they had people in college helping. All these camps that Caleb went through, the course of his life, all the connections he has as a Heisman Trophy winner, it's hard for me to believe there wasn't somebody besides his dad. I'm not saying he shouldn't talk to his dad, because he absolutely should. I'm glad that Carl Williams is as involved in Caleb's life as he is. But you've got to have people who have been through the fire who can help you understand how to get through the fire.
Well, and unfortunately, the one that we know per Carl that Caleb Williams aligned with the most was an opposing coach in the division, and Kevin O'Connell makes that embrace at the end of their game where they're talking for a bit of time, you know, more than normal after the end of a game, make a little more sense too. The amount of moments where I've thought about something differently now in light of the article that came out last week is many, but that's one of them. So, okay, you know that KOC is out, then who are you going to? And that's why, you know, I may not have to say it the way he said it, but he was right. Like, do you need to call a guy like Tom Brady? Do you need to call a guy like Peyton Manning? Since you already were consulting with Archie on the side.
Well, you can't call Tom Brady because he works for another organization. That's tampering.
When did that stop Tom Brady?
Well, I'm just trying to see this through Caleb's lens. And
Tom Brady called Ben Johnson. But yeah, I feel you. But there's a plethora of people, especially if you're already talking to the Manning brothers or the Manning family, as that was reported in the story.
Dude, now, there's nothing stopping him from talking to Eli or Peyton. Or Archie, for that matter.
And
talk to somebody last name Peyton.
But I appreciate Kurt Warner giving his perspective on this, too. Different era, but still valid when it comes to quarterbacks who will tell you about the process and understanding it.
And in summary, look, Ben Johnson's at the helm now. He's as you said, it was a mission statement. I want him to see the field and see the game the way I see it. Talking about Caleb Williams, that is what's going to happen. We'll see how well that vision comes through going from one, the head coach, to the player and back again, because it's got to be a two-way street.
The Cubs got walked off by the Marlins last night.
Oh, I saw.
I'm going to repeat that. The Cubs got walked off by the Marlins last night?
Yeah, that's a thing that happened.
How? Let's do it next on The Score.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
The pitch to Sanchez. Pulled fair inside first. Down into the right field corner. The tying run is in. Here comes the winning run, and the ball game is over.
Feel good. It's baseball, you know, like that happens. So just want to keep my heads up and be here tomorrow.
That was Daniel Palencia, who had been throwing lights out for the Cubs, but unfortunately was part of an 8-7 Marlins walk-off win last night. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score, and it was a game where, at first, I thought that things were going to go much worse because Ben Brown, first two ABs, home run. Brown settles down. Unfortunately, the Marlins end up with a four-run fifth inning, which is in part what chases him from the game. And then ultimately, they score two more in the ninth. So despite a Cubs comeback, the Marlins end up winning by a final of 8-7 in that walk-off. In the grand scheme of things, it is one game after all. But unfortunately, this is the time of the schedule where you want to make some hay. And already, your little benchmark that you wanted, Marshall, is out of reach.
How is that out of reach?
Didn't you want 7 wins out of 9?
Yeah. How is that out of reach? They've lost 2 games.
Both to Marlins.
Yeah. They swept the White Sox. They could still win tonight and tomorrow and be fine.
If they don't, though?
Yeah, if they don't, they don't. You're right. They didn't make it. But, I mean, Porter Hodge got hurt. Also, let's talk about this. I really want a real answer on this. The big double in the ninth. Should Kyle Tucker have caught that ball?
I don't think so.
I looked at the replay a couple times. I was like, should Kyle Tucker have caught that baseball? Because that changes everything, right?
Yeah, it changes everything. But I think his route to the ball was efficient enough to work. Like, that's why I don't have an issue.
So it was out of reach. Okay. All right. Now, I just want to make sure. I want to make sure I was not on an island here.
No, and what he's talking about, there was also a play at the plate, you know, that an aggressive send that gets called back where the Cubs had taken the lead briefly, and then they end up only tying the game at 6 apiece. That was on a challenge. That was the Miguel Amaya double. Miguel Amaya with 5 RBIs in this game. And Moises Ballesteros was sent home, and he's out on the throw. I don't necessarily know that was the best use of a send when you consider it, although Amaya was clearly trying to get a triple, ends up getting the double, and then he advances to third on the throw is how they ended up ruling it. But regardless, that was a moment that ended up, unfortunately, also hurting you in this game. Palencia comes on in the ninth. We find out through what Craig Counsell had to say, and we'll play that audio for you in a minute, is that we learned Porter Hodge wasn't available because of injury, which is another issue. But the ball, you know, the Jesus Sanchez triple, I kept going back over what I saw was what Counsell called a slider, but it was 98 miles an hour. So that's where I sat with this. Like, if you look at the game log on MLB.com, that was 4 balls that were all fastballs out of Palencia. One was just really clearly in the zone, a little bit lower, but it was that final ball that Sanchez was able to turn on. Let's hear what Craig Counsell had to say about that.
You know, he got tail 0-2, and I think he was trying to throw a slider for a ball, and he just hung it a little bit. So, the kid put a good swing on it and hit it, did a nice job. You know, I think he probably got a little tired, honestly, as the inning went on. He's been working really hard and doing a heck of a job, and probably ran out of a little bit of gas there, and the walk, and we had a base hit.
Was there anything you liked about him against that special lineup versus Porter?
Porter's going to go on the injured list. He's got a left oblique issue, so he's unavailable.
It's the way he said it, right?
Oh.
Because we were all watching like, oh, wait, why is Porter Hodge not in the game? What's going on?
So Ben Brown ends up going 4 2/3, gives up 6 earned runs, 7 hits. Caleb Thielbar comes in, 1 1/3 scoreless. Ryan Pressly comes in. He throws an inning, gives up only 1 hit. Drew Pomeranz comes in, gets the hold. He throws an inning. And then that's when Palencia came in. His first blown save of the season. The 2/3 of an inning and then the 2 earned runs, obviously, that result in the walk-off. But that's why I think we saw the order that we saw. It was interesting that we found out that way because we're all wondering the same thing. Well, why wasn't Porter Hodge on there?
It's crazy because Jesus Sanchez, first of all, had the game, right? Lead it off, walk it off. That's one way to do it if you're going to be playing baseball. Also, the Marlins, I know on its face, you're like, how could they lose to the Marlins? They're the Marlins. But the Marlins, they do have I think this is their 6th walk-off win of the year.
I was laughing because yesterday Mark Grody kept talking about the threat of the man who ended up batting cleanup in the Marlins game, Kyle Stowers. And I'm like, oh no, it's Kyle Stowers. But he wasn't even really the issue as much.
The other thing I think that gets lost and that we're going to have to address because of where we are with this injury situation with the bullpen is it was good to see Ryan Pressly out there and he got out of an inning by getting a strikeout swinging. And just for context on that, when we talk about strike swinging, he hasn't had swing and miss stuff, but it was the only pitch that he threw that was swung through and missed. The previous appearance that he had, he didn't have one of those. But the previous 2 appearances, he had 3-1 and then 2-1. But early in the season, he wasn't getting a lot of strikes swinging. If he can get the strikes swinging, maybe he can be moved further and further back into the game. He was in an important situation in a tight game here, albeit the 7th inning. But now that knowing that Porter Hodge wasn't even available, seems like he still has a way to go to climb that reliever rankings, if you will.
Yeah, because who's your next man up? I guess it is Palencia. He's going to have to be that person. That's a very bold move when you consider the profile of that at-bat with Sanchez, where you're trying to throw a slider in the dirt. It still ends up coming out of your hand super fast, and it ends up just looking like it's a low fastball.
The Xavier Sanoja walk on 4 pitches, that, oof.
The walks remain a problem for the Cubs. There's no doubt. Also notable, Matt Shaw goes 2-for-4. He was batting 9th in the game. He has that nice double. And I saw he tried to leg kick. He tried. It ended up just being a mere step. It wasn't a toe tap. It was not a leg kick, but it was still a pickup put down of the foot.
Congratulations to Matt Shaw, who we would be talking about in a completely more excitable way if they hadn't blown the save, because he had the game-winning double until it wasn't the game-winning double.
I still want to make note, though, because I feel like it's a very good sign that he ends up with 2 clean hits the way he did, and one of them for extra bases. And you can tell he is clearly trying to work on that timing mechanism with his swing.
2-for-4 in a first game back, I don't know how much pressure was on him. He was batting in the 9 hole. But to come up with that big of a hit in his first game back after having to be in AAA for as long as he was, it's a great sign for the Cubs and their third base dilemma. He may be the solution to their third base dilemma. It's funny. It was a week ago we were asking what's a bigger area of concern, third base or relief? And I was like, relief, because third base, you can just kind of throw a guy out there who can play defense, Nicky Lopez, and be okay because you've got offense coming from other places. But relief is a relief, and right now there is no relief for the Cubs.
They just don't have enough arms. Like, that's the issue. Now with Porter Hodge on the injured list, and again, obliques aren't necessarily automatic. Ian Happ seems to be. He will talk to us in just mere minutes here at the top of the hour, or at 11:25, rather. Jed Hoyer did expand a little bit more on the situation regarding Porter Hodge and what the solution is. We'll play that for you at the top of the hour here at 11 o'clock on Raheem and Harris. Jed Hoyer was on with Molly and Haw. But when it comes to your circle of trust, you have to have enough people to fill it right now. Pomerantz doing his job. Thielbar, a great outing for him. You're going to have some risk when it comes to even calling these guys' names. I understand that. You also have the situation where there might just be necessity, and you end up putting Ryan Pressly back in that nine spot. But either way, right now it certainly looks like a closer by committee, and that's not what you want on a team that's trying to contend.
I'll say this. At least it's against the Marlins right now as opposed to some of the better teams in baseball. They're still in that stretch facing all these teams with sub-500 records. So this is a good time to have this type of problem. There's no good time to have this type of problem, but this is the best time to have this kind of problem.
But even when you consider facing a team like the Reds, per se, who you know can score at
that
could
be problematic, yes.
Especially at their house, that's
good old
an
great
issue.
American.
So how are we intaking that information? We have more to come. I mentioned right here on Raheemy and Harris, that Jed Hoyer spoke this morning with Mully and Haw. If you missed it, we're going to go back over some of the details, including what he thinks of this injury to Porter Hodge, how the team looks to address it. That's all coming up next.